I was reading recently an interesting article in the Free Press. This is a publication online. That was talking about the story of Passover and the impact of the concept of Passover and the American concept of freedom. So the story of Passover, says here, the article by Mir Soloveitchik is the writer. I think he's a rabbi. The story of Passover is not just a Jewish one. Our founding fathers were proudly inspired by it. So was Cecil B. DeMille. Does that ring a bell? The Ten Commandments, the epic movie. I remember seeing it there in South America with the Spanish dubbings many, many years ago. So in every generation, one is obligated to see himself as if he had left Egypt. This comes from the Haggadah. As some of you probably know, the Haggadah is the procedures of the Jewish Seder, Passover Seder. So the guidelines of what to do, the order of service, that's the Haggadah. In 1956, millions of Americans flooded cinemas to see the Exodus story brought to life in Cecil B. DeMille, The Ten Commandments. Among those moviegoers were American Jews who could not help but feel that the film spoke to them personally and profoundly. When Charles Heston's Moses is asked whether he's ashamed upon learning he's not a prince of Egypt, but rather the son of slaves, he responds, "If there is no shame in me, how can there be shame for the woman who bore me or the race that bred me?" In his book, American Prophet, How the Story of Moses Shaped America, Bruce Feeler recounts how in the 1950s, DeMille had pleaded with Paramount Pictures to make a film about Moses, but received only resistance. This is back in the days in Hollywood, right? Until its CEO, Adolf Zukor, an assimilated Hungarian Jew, rebuked his Jewish colleagues. "We should get down on our knees and thank you, and say thank you, for he wants to make a picture on the life of Moses." At a time when many Jews still struggle with assimilation, Fiddler notes, Moses' open embrace of his faith was a powerful statement of self-confidence. Now, DeMille was also of Jewish descent. One of his parents were of Jewish descent. So for many Orthodox Jewish immigrants recently arrived on American shores, such assimilation was out of the question. Yet many of them also went to see the film in the knowledge that was a deep connection between their own faith and the culture of American society they had just joined. So the theme of this picture is whether men ought to be ruled by God's law or whether they are to be ruled by the whims of a dictator like Ramses. Are men the property of the state or are they free souls under God? The same battle continues today. So it made me think, about we just observed the Passover. Now we're already thinking about the Feast of Tabernacles in the new season. But I do believe that the concept of Passover, the concept of God's people going into Egypt, coming out of Egypt, it should always be in our minds throughout the year, and not just during the Passover season. So this afternoon, I would like to explore and revisit the story when God's people went to Egypt the first time ever. Not in slavery, but at the very beginning. This is in the time of Abraham. Not Abraham, but Abraham. This is not just their story, he and his wife and people who are with him. This is not just their story. It's the story of God's unfolding plan of salvation and how faith is tested and refined. How faith, our faith, is tested and refined. Today we will explore Abraham's spiritual journey from the time He received God's promises for the first time when his faith was truly tested and proven. Just as God tested Abraham, he also allows trials in our lives to reveal whether we are genuinely trust him. Do we believe the promises in God? Or are you, or are we in the faith? That's another way of asking it. So let's begin now by turning our Bibles to Exodus. And this is the first time Abraham, we see that in Genesis chapter 11. Towards the end of that chapter is where actually this story picks up. And Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot. This is verse 31, Genesis 11, 31. And Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot. And Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, and his daughters, son-in-law Haran, and his daughters-in-law Sarai, his sons Abraham's wife, and they went out with them from Ur of the Chaldeans. So this is Abraham's dad. They are in Ur of the Chaldeans. And they came to Haran and dwelt there. So this is interesting because before everything happened, Abraham's dad makes the decision, we're going to leave Ur of the Chaldeans. And they leave with all his family. And they go to Haran, which is a town north of Canaan. So the days of Terah, that's where Terah died. So the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. We don't know how much longer after that, but now is when our story begins in Genesis chapter 12. This is when our story begins. Let's see here. Now, the Lord had said to Abraham, to Abram, in this case, the Lord had said to Abram, and here's where we begin. God tells Abraham, get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you, and I'll make you a great nation, I'll bless you, and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Isn't that incredible? You know, here's a family that God decides to work with. He never gave up in his plan of salvation. He was going to bring salvation to the entire humanity. And this time, he picks a man from Ur of the Chaldeans. He has his own culture, his own worldview. Brings him out of his environment to the land of Canaan. And makes this incredible promise. Just think about Abraham hearing this. Is it me? You're going to make a great nation? And you're going to bless those who bless me? And by the way, my wife, she cannot have children. He probably thinks, okay. So verse 4. So Abraham departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him, and Abraham was 75 years old. Let's just take into consideration the time span. He was 75 years old when this happens. When he departed to Aram. Verse 5. And Abraham took his wife, Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their possessions and all they had gathered, and the people whom they had acquired in Haran. That's probably they lived for a while in Haran, northern Canaan. And they departed to the land of Canaan. That is the promised land. That people of God already entering the promised land at that time. They go to the promised land. So they, because they at that time was not called the promised land, but that's the land that God was promising him. He, his descendants, you're going to go and live here and I'll prosper you. So they came to the land of Canaan. Verse 6, Abraham passed through the land to the place of Shechem, as far as the Terebinth tree of Moreh. And the Canaanites were then in the land. And you might start thinking about already as Abraham starts his spiritual journey, and God makes all these promises, and they go to the land, and there's other people there. So how God's going to give me all this? How's that going to happen? I just wonder what's happening in his head as his spiritual journey begins. So, did Abraham at this point believe in faith the promises of God? Let's continue with the story. In verse 7. Then the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, second time, God, Yahweh, appears to Abraham a second time. In verse 7. To your descendants I will give this land. And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. And he moved from there to the mountain east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent in Bethel to the west of Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. That's calling God's presence, the name of the Lord. So Abraham journeyed going to the south. That God's people, they're already in the land that God has promised them. They're already there. And now God is expanding that blessing, saying, to your descendants, I'll give this land. It's talking about Canaan. Not talking about any other geographical area. I'll give this land where you are, Abraham, right now. This is what I'm going to give to your descendants. So this promise are expanded to the descendants. Once again, the Lord appears to Abraham while he's dwelling in the promised land. Did Abraham believe in faith the promises of God? Did he believe? Let's continue with the story. So in verse 10, and this is interesting. Here's God's people. They come into the promised land. The Canaanite are there. Other people are there. That's it. There's just like Bedouins with their tents and camels coming into the land. This is the land we're going to be here. And God says, to your descendants, well, I don't have even one child yet. You know, what descendants? What descendants? Well, in verse 10, now there was a famine in the land. And you think about Abraham's spiritual journey. All these promises, what happened to the land that flows milk and honey that comes later, right? They come into the promised land and there's a famine in the land. So is this the place where you're going to multiply, going to make me wealthy as the stars? And there's a famine, we have to leave. Just like the second time, remember Joseph? When Jacob had to, there was a famine in the land and they got to go to Egypt. So this time again, verse 10, now there's a famine in the land. A famine in the promised land? And Abraham went down to Egypt to dwell there. Once again, Egypt comes into the picture here and the journey of God's people. And in this time is a land that saved them. It's not always the land of oppression, slavery and sin, as we see later on. But this time, if it weren't because of that, there's a famine in the land. Verse 11, it came to pass when he was close to entering Egypt that he said to his wife Sarai, this is interesting. They leave, goes towards Egypt, a well-established kingdom, prosperous and wealthy. And here is Abraham, said to his wife Sarai, indeed, I know you are a woman of beautiful countenance. You know, wife, you are a beautiful woman. Therefore, it will happen that when the Egyptians see you, that they will say, this is his wife, and they will kill me. But they will let you leave. Please say you are my sister, that I may be well with that it may be well with me for your sake, and that I may live because of you. Now just think, I thought about this for a little while. I guess I was trying to do a little bit of research. In ancient times, you know, having a beautiful life can kill you. It was common that, you know, men of power will just grab your wife and, hey, get rid of the guy, and now you have another wife. But here you're saying that I'm going to use deception. Basically, let's not tell the truth. No, he was his half-sister, but he was also his wife. We know that later on. And because of this, there could be some prosperity coming. I mean, maybe be well because of you. Did it ever cross your mind, what's going to happen to your wife? What will happen to Sarai? Let's think through this. What will happen to her if we go with this? Would it become part of Pharaoh's harem? Is going to marry one Egyptian? Is going to take her? What about the promises of God? I'll make you a nation. I'll bless those who bless you. I'll curse those who curse you. So you see, Abraham here is in the spiritual journey. Does he believe the promises of God? Really, you believe God in his promises. Why are we? And yet God is patient and faithful to his promises. So, fearing for his safety, Abraham used deception to preserve his life. In ancient times, you know, so this seems to be a pattern, though. You know, this seems to be a pattern in early life with some biblical patriarchs. You know, saying that my wife is actually my sister is not. We all know, we read the Bible. That don't happen once. It happened more than once. And not only with Abraham, but also with Isaac, his son. So this pattern in early life in some biblical patriarchs, they are given personal promises from the Lord. But when a time of testing and trial came, they showed that they didn't fully believe the promises of God. Believe. So Abraham, and the first time it happened with Sarah in Egypt, is in Genesis 12, as we're reading. The second time, actually, it's also Abraham. But this time, Abimelech. And this is in Genesis 20. Same scenario. It's not Egypt this time. It's in a different area. And same thing, it's my sister. And in this time, I don't know how time to go in detail, but God gave Abimelech in a vision and a dream. So this is a man's wife. And he got really angry with Moses, with Abraham. You can read the account. You tell him, what are you doing this? Isn't that interesting? What we consider unrighteous men are rebuking God's people, Abraham. As we will read here. Why do you say this lie? We could have died. Don't you understand the consequence? It's almost like we know the Lord Yahweh and his respect, his power. We acknowledge him. It's almost like, but wait, he made you a promise. You should even know him more. You should trust him more. What an interesting reversal of roles. The unrighteous telling the righteous, you should fear God and believe him. Does that, you know, it strikes me as, and the last example here is Rebecca and Isaac. The same thing. A beautiful wife. And this is another Abimelech. It's not the same Abimelech Abraham, but it's a different one. He sees, you know, his Isaac, you know, caressing Rebecca. This is in Genesis 26. And then he realized, wait a minute, that's not his sister, it's his wife. And there's another one. These repeated patterns show how even God's chosen patriarchs wrestled with fear, self-preservation, and imperfect faith. And God remained faithful. See, God is faithful to his promises. So let's see now in Genesis 12, verse 14, as we conclude this part of this scripture. An interesting unfolding of the story here. So it was when Abraham came into Egypt that the Egyptians, sure enough, saw that the woman that she was very beautiful. Verse 15. The princes of Pharaoh also saw her and commended her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. Just like Abraham said was going to happen. He treated Abraham well for her sake. Here's Abraham being benefited physically. He had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female servants, female donkeys, and camels. The result of a deception comes as a prosperous things that are given to her. Now, verse 17. But the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. See, God is faithful to his promise. He's going to execute righteous judgment regardless of how it came about. So, we don't know exactly which plagues. The scripture doesn't tell us that. But here is the first time we hear God executing plagues, sending plagues to Egypt. Because we see the second story of the Exodus, there's also plagues. Now, and Pharaoh called Abraham and said, "What is this that you have done to me?" Now, we don't know how he found out. We know in the second case with Abimelech, God told him in a dream. Maybe God told Pharaoh in a dream, "You know, you are taking somebody else's wife. The man, the servant that I have chosen to unfold my plan of salvation for humanity. Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she was my sister?" And here the concept I was talking about before, you know, what's going to happen to Sarai? I might have taken her as my wife. So do we see here that Pharaoh has some moral compass? So he sees the wrong in it. Don't you understand that this could have been disastrous? Many people more could have, and we don't know how many people died. More things could have come as God executes judgment because of this deception. Now therefore, here's your wife. Take her and go away. So doesn't harm Abraham. Doesn't harm him. Doesn't do anything to him. He tells her, please leave. Soon as possible. Not like the second time when God hardens the heart of Pharaoh and says, let my people go. Nuh-uh. This time, first time people God went to Egypt, Pharaoh said, leave. An unrighteous man rebuking a righteous to be. A man, Abraham, and in a spiritual journey. And I can assure you, this experiences in a man's life, it make an imprint. It will make an imprint in their life. He will probably meditate and think of this in years to come as his life unfolds. Right? The Lord is faithful to his promises. So, incredible. Despite Abraham's deception, God protected and even blessed him materially. Egypt was plagued, not because of Pharaoh's evil, but because of Abraham's fear and half-truths. Isn't that remarkable? It shows that God's covenant doesn't rest on our perfection, but on his faithfulness. You see, God is now counting on the perfection of Abraham. He is faithful to his promises. He's going to carry on with his plan. So it's interesting just to see here a brief synopsis of Abraham's life. He was called by God when he was in Haran. He was 75 years old. He went to Egypt. Then he couldn't have a child, right? Remember, and what Sarah said, hey, I have my servant Hagar. And then Ishmael is born. And now he's 86 years old. 11 years have passed. So this is another test. You know, how come, we can't have, here's my servant. And the Ishmaelites come from it. And they're the one who sold Joseph into slavery, into Egypt. Isn't that interesting? And the biblical account says that they oppress Hagar. And the Ishmaelites come from it. Just a nice note. And then God changed his name to Abraham when he was 99 years old. It's almost 24 years later. And that's where the circumcision covenant happened in Genesis 17. Now, when he is also about, we estimate, this estimation maybe 113, 17. Isaac is born when he's 100 years old. Finally, a son. And 25 years have happened since God first promised him to your descendants. 25 years. Now, he's 100 years old, and we now know that Isaac was probably kind of like a teenager because he was able to carry the wood for the sacrifice. Maybe, you know, maybe, let's say 13 years old. So about 113 years old would actually, the next test for Abraham happened. Now, we'll take a look at this a little bit. So 25 years have passed. And now let's go to Genesis 22. This is the one last test. Genesis 22. We read that God tested Abraham by asking him to offer his only son Isaac as a sacrifice. After 25 years old, another test. More than 25 years have passed until God fully tested Abraham. So it says here, now it came to pass in Genesis chapter 22, verse 1. Now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, his name now was Abraham, no Abram. And he said, here I am. And he said, take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. And if you continue reading the account, 25 years have happened, and what Abraham does this time? He believes God. He follows the instructions. And he takes a servant and his son, and they go to this place, like a mountain, and then the servant said, stay here, we're going to go. And then Isaac says, hey, dad, you know, father, where is the ram? Where is the offering? And he says, God will provide. And then verse 9, when they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order, and he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood, and Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. He truly believed God. He has promised to make, just like the beginning, he's promised to make him a great nation, a multitude of nations. And this time, he said, God will provide. I don't know how. That's when you truly believe God. I don't know how it's going to happen. But he took that knife and he was about to strike the young man. But an angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here I am. And he said, do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him. For now I know, after 25 years, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. So, did Abraham believe in faith the promises of God? Yes, he did. 25 years. When we were in college, you know, Dr. Ward, some of the classes that we used to take, I think it was the doctrines class. I remember, like, one simple definition of faith is believe God and do what he says. That is the definition of faith. One definition. Believe God and do what it says. He will provide. So in conclusion, it's interesting that throughout our Christian lives, we're going to be tested. There's going to be tests to our lives. Do we believe? Are we in the faith? And this is actually an interesting. We do examined this scriptures during the Passover in 1 Corinthians 11:28, when it says, "But let a man examine himself." We review this during the Passover. You heard countless messages about what does it mean examining. In 1 Corinthians 11:28, "But let a man examine himself, for so let him eat the bread and drink of the cup." But that word dokimazo in Greek, dokimazo, that word is actually, it means to test for genuineness. It's a test. Is this really genuine? And it's used extensively in the New Testament to convey the idea of, I need to test this. I'm not sure if it's true. I'm not sure if this is actually genuine. Like testing precious metals in fire. I need to test if this is gold. Throw it in the fire, like it purifies. It appears 22 times in the New Testament, often in the context of a spiritual self-examination and discernment too. You got to discern. But the scripture I want to review with you is actually in 2 Corinthians 13. When Paul again uses this word, but in a slightly different context, not necessarily now in the Passover. It says, "Examine yourselves as to whether you are in the faith." That first examine is not dokimazo, it's periazo, which is a synonym. But the next one, test yourselves, that is dokimazo, exactly the same, test yourself. "Do you not know yourselves that Jesus Christ is in you, unless you are disqualified?" So, just as Abraham's faith matured over time, so must ours. The Apostle Paul urges in 2 Corinthians 13:5 to examine ourselves. Today, God still tests our faith. Do not destroy it. Not to destroy it, but to refine it. It's a refinement process. Like Abraham, we may falter at times, but if we let Christ live in us, our journey can end in deep, unwavering faith. So, are you truly in the faith? Let's examine ourselves and let's wholeheartedly believe God and do what He says.